House and the Senate passed a bill that substitutes the opinions of politicians for the judgment of our military commanders. So a few minutes ago, I vetoed the bill.
Well, you're just a hell of a leader, aren't you?
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova Am Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Yeah, he vetoed it within a couple hours after it was sent to him. The irony here is so thick it makes you want to just open up a vein, but we'll get to that. On the fourth anniversary of Mission Accomplished, and we have some stats for you on that too, Bush vetoes the very bill he needs to continue funding his endless slaughter in Iraq. It's his second veto in 6.5 years, over 6 years, and it's against his own war because it includes a plan to eventually stop the killing. What a monster this psychopath is. He is handed a dignified, honorable way, if there is any honor left on the American side in this genocide that we've perpetrated against the Iraqi people. He's given a chance to get out with as much dignity as this scumbag can possibly muster. And what does he do? Metaphorically, he just pees on it and exerts his power as the executive. My God. According to this freak, he vetoed the bill because the Democrats who authored it, quote, set a date for failure, end quote, in Iraq. Well, should we all line up and tell Raisin Brain that date was set from the beginning when he and Cheney and Rumsfeld decided to ignore bin Laden and al-Qaeda and instead launch an illegal oil war and occupation in Iraq? Why does Bush hate our troops? It's because he could never be one of them. Because he was a coward and a chicken and a freak. Why doesn't he want them to have the funding they need and bring them home alive? Because he hates them. They are toys to him. This is how George Bush plays president. It's incredible. All the Democratic bill provides for is continued funding of this filthy, filthy, dishonorable thing that we've done in Iraq. And a chance to get our troops out. We'll get to that in a moment, though. Today's May Day. And do you understand that May Day originates with the American labor movement? Got an email from Joseph, who is a Wobbly, member of the International Workers of the World. He writes, on May 1st, 1886, unions across the country went on strike demanding that the standard workday be shortened to 8 hours. Now, prior to that, the workday had been anything the bosses wanted it to be. The workers said no, nationwide strike, 8 hours. And that the work week be, therefore, 40 hours. They wanted Saturday and Sunday off for the first time in the history of the working class in this country. The organizers of these strikes were socialists, anarchists, workers, freedom fighters, and others in organized labor movements. On May 4th, rioting by the police in Chicago's Haymarket Square included a bomb thrown, evidently by police, and blamed on an anarchist. It led to the deaths of a dozen people, including several police officers. About 100 people were injured. It became known as the Haymarket Massacre, May 4th, 1886. And on November 11th of that year, that's known as Haymarket Martyrs' Day, because four of the anarchists were hanged for the crime they did not commit. The protests were eventually successful in bringing about the eight-hour workday, which became the norm for workers. Labor leaders, socialists, and anarchists around the world took the American strikes and rallied around the events, making May Day a day for demonstrations, parades, and speeches. It's a major state holiday in many countries. And it's often a day for protests and rallies. In recent years, these have often been targeted against globalization and so-called neoliberalism. But here in the United States, see, we don't acknowledge May Day. We call it Law Day. I remember, I think it was in the, what, the 60s when this first was put into effect? 50s, 60s, 70s? Law Day. And the freak in the White House issued a proclamation that is astonishing, coming from someone who follows the law only if he feels like it. Someone who has written hundreds of signing statements negating the law as written by Congress, a Republican Congress. Bush refuses to follow the FISA Act. He insists that habeas corpus doesn't apply only to those to whom he wants it to apply. That the first 10 amendments of the Constitution are trash and garbage, and his words, the Constitution is nothing more than a goddamn piece of paper. Quote, unquote. You want to hear a statement? Here it is. And try to contain yourself, because I know you're going to have either an urge to laugh hysterically or to plunge something sharp into your thigh. Don't do either. Listen to the blatant, stupefying hypocrisy here. Our nation is built upon the rule of law and guided by our founding promise of freedom, equality, and justice for all. Law Day is an opportunity to celebrate the Constitution and the laws to protect our rights and liberties and to recognize our responsibility as citizens to uphold the values of a free and just society. Generations of Americans have served the cause of justice and shaped our legal institutions to ensure that the blessings of liberty extend to every citizen. The men and women of America's legal community have worked to defend the Constitution, protect the innocent, and secure the rights of their fellow citizens. Their efforts have helped make our nation a shining example of justice. Excuse me while I just burp up a little bit of bile here, okay? The freak who signed this, George W. Bush, is the man who, through his crime family, has ordered that people accused with crimes against the United States not be allowed even to have a conversation with an attorney. It goes on. He continues, America's faith in the rule of law has endured through the centuries. Are you paying attention to this? Today we strive to prepare our next generation of leaders to carry on America's tradition of freedom and democracy. The theme of this year's Law Day, Liberty Under Law, Empowering Youth, Assuring Democracy, highlights the importance of teaching our young people about the vital role they can play in our democratic society. Liberty Under Law? How many members of the Bush crime family, truth seeker, come to mind when you stop and think how they have perverted the law? Starting with John Ashcroft and Bush's personal Tejano Alberto Gonzalez and on and on and on. That's what these bastards have done, perverted the law. But he goes on. He says, we all have a duty to help our youth become responsible citizens by promoting the virtues that sustain our democracy and fostering a deeper understanding and respect for our Constitution. This from a rat bastard who has done everything in his power and then some to undermine the Constitution. He goes on. These young men and women will shape the future of our country, and their spirit and character will help promote justice, equality, and opportunity throughout our country. Well, Mr. Bush, only if they have your ass arrested and charged with treason. The strength of our legal system requires the ongoing commitment of every citizen. As we observe Law Day, we celebrate our nation's legal heritage. Astonishing. And honor those who work to advance the cause of justice. Mind-boggling. Now, therefore, I, George W. Bush, President of the United States, in accordance with Public Law 8720, as amended, do hereby proclaim May 1st, 2007, as Law Day, USA. I call upon all the people of the United States to observe this day with appropriate ceremonies and activities. I also call upon government officials to display the flag of the United States in support of this national observance. in witness whereof I have hereunto set my hand, blah, 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 blah. The hypocrisy, the duplicity, the cynicism is astounding coming out of the mouth of this treasonous, traitorous, warmongering thug that sits in the White House. Unbelievable. When I read that today, it was just like, oh, dear God. This can't be real. This can't be real. But Truth Seeker, it is. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Crying child, why her daddy won't go back. Said the family suffer, but it hurts me more to hear a scab say, sod you, Jack. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Bound to follow my conscience, and I'll do whatever I can, and it'll take much more than a union law to knock the fight out of a working man. And which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys?
Of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
There's not going to be any graceful exit. What the hell is a graceful exit? So Bush vetoes the war funding bill, $124 billion, another one of his emergency war funding bills. See, none of the, I don't think any bill for the funding of anything in Iraq has been in a regular budget. It has always been supplementals or emergency funding, so it doesn't show up in the books. So it doesn't indicate how clearly the Bush crime family has mismanaged the finances that of this country. Remember, he was handed an amazing surplus and projections of as much as a $3 trillion surplus over the next 10 years had George W. Bush simply followed whatever it was that Clinton was doing. But that's not what he did. He turned around and gave that $3 trillion in tax breaks to the ultra-wealthy over the next 10 years. So he screwed up every single thing. This was a supplemental war funding bill of another $124 billion. What? Oh, you in the back. Yes? Something about Iraqi oil funding the war? Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, today, of course, coincidentally, is the fourth anniversary of this Bush getting up, dressed up in war drag and prancing around on the deck of an aircraft carrier. And talking about mission accomplished, he didn't actually say that. Nobody ever said he did. He stood in front of a banner that said mission accomplished. And he said America and its allies in Iraq had prevailed. Major combat operations have ended. What the hell is going on now? This bill arrived at the White House about 4 p.m. today, Eastern Time. Bush was on television at 6. 2 hours later, to explain why this little rat bastard was vetoing something put together by people who care about the American military man and woman, and who care about America's image, and who care about how we're being bankrupted, and who care about what happens to soldiers and Marines when they come home blown to pieces because of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. I don't know. You know, it's truthout.org pointed out something within minutes of Bush's veto being announced. Corporate press services nationwide began reporting the story. Overwhelmingly, the headline phrase of choice appears to contain some reference to Bush vetoing the so-called Iraq withdrawal bill. In fact, there is no Iraq withdrawal bill. What has been vetoed is the Iraq Emergency Supplemental Spending Bill. Now, the Bush crime family has determined it's going to spin the bill as a withdrawal bill because withdrawal from Iraq was added to the measure by Congress. The headline chosen by most U.S. corporate news services appears to aid the White House's public relations effort. Another reason to hate these pigs in the corporate media. The giggling killer, then, finally met, in reality, his second bill. What was the first one? What was it? Something to do with abortion? Something to do with stem cell research? I have no idea. I know whatever it was as dishonorable a veto as this is. But for the second time in his six-plus years, this incompetent half-wit vetoes a bill that provided our fighting men and women with everything they needed, plus a way out. But because he's a little tin dictator who likes to play soldier with real-life soldiers, as long as it's not him or his, he vetoed it. He wants the killing to continue. Bush in his own words, when we come back, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Our mission in Iraq is a vital mission. The mission is one that will be that we obviously couldn't complete if we didn't fulfill our goals.
I'm walking down the street.
26 before the hour. Before we do Chuckle Nuts here, let's bring in Wayne, who's called in from Boston. Wayne, welcome to the program. Hey, Wayne. 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 Okay, hang it up, please. Thank you. Goodbye, Wayne. Oy. All right, let's get to Chickenhawk Chucklenuts vetoing the war funding bill he needs to continue his slaughter in Iraq. This giggling killer finally met essentially the second bill he wanted to kill, one that would have funded his bloody war, but with a withdrawal date, the beginning of a withdrawal date. That's all. Contrary to his lies, this bill supports the troops in two ways. First, it actually contains more money than he originally asked for, and again, off the books. And second, it supports the troops by detailing a plan to bring as many of them home alive and intact as possible. Huh? Yeah. Yet the murderous monkey man persists in spending the propaganda, spreading the propaganda, the myth that Democrats aren't supporting the troops. And of course, every time you turn on mainstream media, you hear reference to that. Not that mainstream media is reporting that Democrats aren't supporting the troops, but they're reporting that this sick bastard says Democrats aren't supporting the troops, which with this corrupt, filthy media is essentially the same as they're saying Democrats don't support the troops. You know who the biggest offender, in my opinion, on CNN is? Andrea Koppel. Oh, this woman makes me just want to scream. So here's a little test. Ask yourself, which group is trying to give the troops funding, body armor, training, good veterans care, and trying to bring them home safely? Which group puts them in harm's way, makes them torture other people, doesn't provide adequate body armor or protection or training, and keeps redeploying the same battered group over and over and over, or keeps sending grandmas from the National Guard to get blown to bits on the front line, huh? Which group? Democrats or Republicans. Tell me which group is really supporting the troops. But I digress. Here's the decider lecturing those naughty Democrats.
Setting a deadline for withdrawal is setting a date for failure. And that would be irresponsible. Oh. The bill would impose impossible conditions on our commanders in combat.
Oh.
After forcing most of our troops to withdraw, the bill would dictate the terms on which the remaining commanders and troops could engage the enemy.
It's a lie!
That means Americans' commanders in the middle of a combat zone would have to take fighting directions from politicians 6,000 miles away in Washington, D.C.
Like Dick Cheney?
This is a prescription for chaos and confusion, and we must not impose it on our troops.
A prescription for chaos and confusion? You miserable bastard! What do you think is going on now? This is a prescription for chaos and confusion, like, standing under a banner that says mission accomplished and then having the battle get increasingly bloody for the next 4 years. Is that what you're talking about, you halfwit? Here's one of those famous statements Bush makes without even a trace, a hint, a smell of irony. He describes, probably accurately, how dangerous Iraq is because of al-Qaeda, without bothering to mention the fact that it's his fault that al-Qaeda moved from Afghanistan to Iraq, because he made Iraq the martyred state, the new martyred state in the Muslim world. There was no al-Qaeda in Iraq before Bush's illegal invasion and occupation. Arguably, he could have stopped al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, or somebody could have, maybe with the help of other nations who were all united behind us after 9/11. Remember that. That would have been the end of al-Qaeda in terms of being a great threat to America and to other emerging democracies, right? But no. He had to go after Saddam, win his mama's respect. Oh, and those Halliburton oil rights. So now al-Qaeda has moved into Iraq, because Bush became their number one recruiting tool and number one killer of Americans. Bush has killed more Americans now than Osama bin Laden, if you believe the official story of what happened on September 11th, 2001. But it's the Democrats' fault somehow that he's losing in Iraq and making Americans less safe and weakening the military.
We continue to see spectacular suicide attacks that have caused great suffering. These attacks are largely the work of al-Qaeda, the enemy that everyone agrees we should be fighting. The objective of these al-Qaeda attacks is to subvert our efforts by reigniting the sectarian violence in Baghdad.
Mention September 11th.
And breaking support for the war here at home.
Mention September 11th.
Iraq is, in fact, the central front of all al-Qaeda's global campaign.
September 11th.
Al-Qaeda's role makes the conflict in Iraq far more complex than a simple fight between Iraqis.
September 11th.
Many also belong to the same terrorist network that attacked us on September the 11th, 2001.
There it is!
And wants to attack us here at home again.
Because of you! Oh! And we sit here. We sit here. America sits here. And we listen to this. And then when this freak says this, the cable networks, because they were on the air, trot out the usual brain-dead so-called political consultants to parse and analyze what this idiot has just said. And it's disgusting. Here's the last one from the world's number one terrorist, the killer of more Americans than Osama and Saddam combined, as he threatens the Democrats with warnings of dire consequences if the Democrats don't let him continue killing our troops as he sees fit. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? here's a list of bad things that will happen to our troops if the Democrats try to bring them home alive. This is the kind of asinine thinking that only chuckle nuts could embrace.
The need to act is urgent. Without a war funding bill, the military has to take money from some other account or training program so the troops in combat have what they need.
Oh, my God.
Without a war funding bill, the armed forces will have to consider cutting back on buying new equipment or repairing existing equipment.
Like they're doing now?
Without a war funding bill, we add to the uncertainty felt by our military families.
Oh.
Our troops and their families deserve better, and their elected leaders can do better.
Bring them home.
Here in Washington, we have our differences on the way forward in Iraq, and we will debate them openly.
As you have in the past, right?
Whatever our differences, surely we can agree that our troops are worthy of this funding, and that we have a responsibility to get it to them without further delay. Thank you for listening. May God bless our troops.
Oh, stop it. Surely we can agree that our troops are worthy of this funding, and surely, chuckle nuts, you would agree they're worthy of living? How about that? How about worthy of living and coming home and seeing their children and their spouses and their parents? You bloodthirsty vampire. We have a responsibility to get money to them without further delay, and the Democrats are trying to do just that, George. You are stopping them. For example, with this veto. What did he say? Without a war funding bill, we add to the uncertainty felt by our military families. I bet they would feel more certain with their families home and intact and safe. Huh? All right. That's what Bush says. That's what Bush says. This is what General, retired, let me get it here, Major General Paul D. Eaton, U.S. Army, retired. He, from June 2003 until March 2004, he was the commanding general of the Coalition Military Training Assistance Training Team in Iraq, charged with rebuilding the Iraqi armed forces. From March 2004 until June 2004, he was further charged with the development of all Iraqi security forces. Here's his statement today. Dear Mr. President, today in your veto message regarding the bipartisan legislation just passed on Operation Iraqi Freedom, you asserted that you so decided to veto because you listened to your commanders on the ground. Respectfully, as your former commander on the ground, your administration did not listen to our best advice. In fact, a number of my fellow generals were forced out of their jobs because they did not tell you what you wanted to hear, most notably General Eric Shinseki, whose foresight regarding troop levels was advice you rejected at our troops' peril. The legislation you vetoed today represented a course of action that is long overdue. This war can no longer be won by the military. We must bring to bear the entire array of national power, including diplomatic and economic. The situation demands a surge in diplomacy and pressure on the Iraqi government to fix its internal affairs. Further, the Army and Marine Corps are on the verge of breaking or have been broken already by the length and intensity of this war. This tempo is not sustainable. And you have failed to grow the ground forces to meet national security needs. We must begin the process of bringing troops home and repairing and growing our military if we are ever to have a combat-ready force for the long war on terror ahead of us.
Thank you, son.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Major General Paul D. Eaton, U.S. Army, retired, finishes in his letter to George Bush on the rejection of the legislation passed by both the House and the Senate. General Eaton concludes by saying, "The bill you rejected today sets benchmarks for success that the Iraqis would have to meet and puts us on a course to redeploy our troops. It stresses the need for sending troops into battle only when they are rested, trained, and equipped. In my view, and in the view of many others in the military that I know, that is the best course of action for our security. As someone who has served this nation for decades, I have the utmost respect for the office you hold. However, as a man of conscience, I could not sit idly by as you told the American people today that your veto was based on the recommendations of military men. Your administration ignored the advice of our military's finest minds before, and I see no evidence that you are listening to them now. I urge you to reconsider your position and work with Congress to pass a bill that achieves the goals laid out above. Respectfully, Major General Paul D. Eaton, U.S. Army, retired." Jesus, God. You know, I can't help but wonder if when some of these retired generals get together, the ones that either were forced out, cashiered, forced to take early retirement, or just said, "This is nuts," and left. I wonder when they get together if they sit around and talk about the unthinkable, that the country is in such dire straits that maybe there should be a military coup to restore constitutional order. And now, of course, that's an oxymoron. That's to bypass the Constitution entirely by overthrowing or ceasing the government of this crime family would be a drastic step that I don't know if this country could ever recover from. But I just wonder if these generals don't, you know how you are with your friends, right? And I am with my friends. Sit around and talk sometimes about the unthinkable, regardless of what the topic is. But I'm almost positive they do it. These are military men who have been forced out. These are flag rank military men. These are people that wrote military policy. These are people who barely were able to keep their understanding of what was going on in check in order to defer to a civilian government that they know and knew was out of control and completely wrong and misguided. But because of 230 years of constitutional rule, they did not rise up and say, "That's enough." But I wonder, and I'm almost certain, that when they do sit around and have a couple of drinks and kick back and start talking about this half-witted jerk in the White House and the crew that he's had around him for 6 years, if they don't indeed talk about the what-ifs. On May 1st, 2003, the number of U.S. troops wounded in Iraq, 542. Today, 24,912. On May 1st, 2003, the number of U.S. troops killed, 139. Today, 3,351. On May 1st, 2003, the number of contractors killed, 69. Today, 916. On May 1st, 2003, the number of journalists and media assistants killed in Iraq, 11. Today, 167. On May 1st, 2003, the number of U.S. forces in Iraq, 150,000. Today, 146,000. On May 1st, 2003, the size of the Iraqi security forces, 7 to 9,000. Today, 334,300. On May 1st, 2003, the number of insurgents in that sad country, less than 5,000. Today, 70,000, counting the Sunnis only. On May 1st, 2003, insurgent attacks per day, 8. Today, 149. On May 1st, 2003, the cost to U.S. taxpayers, $79 billion. Today, $421 billion. On May 1st, 2003, the approval of Bush's handling of the war in Iraq, 75%. Today, 24%. On May 1st, 2003, the percentage of Americans who believe the Iraq war was worth fighting, 70%. Today, 34%. And on May 1st, 2003, George W. Bush's overall job approval, 71%. Today, 30%. Mission accomplished indeed. Seven past the hour. Boy, I'll tell you, the confluence of events today, Law Day, May Day, Veto Day, it's just, I don't know. It's getting difficult to not come on this program and just blow about six arteries all at once. Thank God for this thick pane of glass between you and me, Kathy. In case that does happen, you know, it won't get all over you. Oh! Speaking of which, next week we'll be off. I'm taking some time off. Do you know who's going to substitute for us next week? I don't either. But it'll be live shows, I'm sure. I don't think it's going to be any best ofs, which are not really best ofs. They're just, hey, let's put this on. Well, they're all good, right? Whatever our associate producer, Ian Huff, comes up with, you will love it! That's next week. And Friday coming is Kid Night or Youth Night or however you want to say it. If you're 13, 14, 15, 16, or 17, that age group, the program is going to be essentially yours Friday night. We just want to hear what you've got to say. I don't know what how I'm going to prime the pump with what topics are available that day or sound bites, but... usually when we do Youth Night, the response is pretty interesting, to say the least, from kids who are a hell of a lot more aware than you might or I might think. They know what's going on. You know, a lot of kids are painted as just being focused on their Xboxes and the rap music and so on and so forth. And they do kid stuff. Hell, we did kid stuff. But they're also aware. just like you were aware when you were 13, 15, 16. I was damn sure aware. Every time I went to school, I had to do a duck and cover drill. I knew all through elementary school that my ass could be cinderized along with my entire family and the whole nation in the blink of an eye. I knew what was going on. So do these kids. So, Friday night coming. Kid night, youth night. And then the following week, we're going to be off. The news from Afghanistan is getting worse. U.S. Special Forces said they killed more than 130 Taliban in two recent days of heavy fighting in a valley in western Afghanistan. But, hundreds of villagers protested on Monday, saying dozens of civilians had been killed when the Americans called in airstrikes. Local residents said that civilians were killed in the bombardment and that some drowned in the river as they fled. They said women and children were among the dead yet again. Local residents said the fighting angered them because the Americans raided their houses at night. A local member of parliament from that area, Mulavi Gul Ahmad, said the Americans, they should not do that. The number that they claimed, that 130 Taliban were killed, is wrong. And then, of course, the writer of this article states the obvious. Raiding houses touches a nerve in Afghanistan, especially in conservative tribal areas, because the local custom dictates that men who are not family members cannot enter the parts of homes where the women stay. Such raids were upsetting local sensibilities so much several years ago that the American forces made an agreement with the Afghan government that they would not raid houses without the presence of Afghan elders or the police. American troops do not adhere to that agreement. So here we go again. I don't know. We're being set up for something, truth seekers, that is that's going to be very long and very drawn out. The only thing I can think of that Bush has said that is the truth is that this is it's going to be a long, long fight because he has set us up for this. You don't fight terrorism. Terrorism is a condition. It's an act. It's not something you fight. I mean, just by its definition, you don't fight it. Oh God, never mind. This is not that I give too much of a damn about British Petroleum, but here's another example of the crushing pressure that people who happen to be gay, men and women, deal with constantly. The chief executive of British Petroleum, John Brown, resigned today, a few hours after a judge in London lifted a legal injunction preventing a newspaper from publishing details of his private life. The company's board appointed Tony Hayward as the new chief executive, effective immediately. Now, John Brown had been fighting since January to suppress details from an interview with a man with whom Brown had had a relationship from being published by the London Daily Mail on Sunday. The Mail on Sunday is the name of it, that newspaper. Brown said in a statement, quote, "For the past 41 years of my career at BP, I've kept my private life separate from my business life. I've always regarded my sexuality as a personal matter to be kept private. It is a matter of personal disappointment that a newspaper group has now decided that allegations about my personal life should be made public," end quote. Now, his decision to resign immediately means he's going to lose a bonus. He's also going to lose inclusion in the long-term performance share plan for such and such a year. The loss is around $50 million this guy is going to lose because of the fact that it is titillating to report that someone happens to be gay. And why is it titillating? Because the laws of most Western countries and every Islamic country, the laws of just damn near every nation that considers itself to be founded on principles of people of the book, whether it be Jewish, Muslim, or Christian, dictate that gay folk are to be dishonored, disrespected, and treated as, I don't know, something to be titillated about. It goes on to say, after more than a decade at the helm of British Petroleum, Brown, a close associate of Prime Minister Tony Blair, announced earlier this year that he would resign at the end of July. But now he's leaving immediately because revelations that he is gay. And the part that makes me, personally, just want to pull clumps of my remaining hairs out of my head, this is asinine. This is barbaric. This is Leviticus. This is disgusting. How many people... Oh, never mind. Oh, God. What's the point? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Mullen.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
See an email or two, and then we're going to do your some phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. This is from Claudia in Kentucky. She writes, Mike, the following Senate Intelligence Committee members were privy to the lack of evidence of Iraq weapons of mass destruction in the 108th Congress. The Democrats were Bob Graham, Carl Levin, John Rockefeller IV, Dianne Feinstein, Ron Wyden, Dick Durbin, Evan Bayh, John Edwards, Barbara Mikulski, Tom Daschle. And the Republicans were Richard Shelby, John Kyle, James Inhofe, Orrin Hatch, Pat Roberts, Mike DeWine, Fred Thompson, Richard Lugar, and Trent Lott. So it's not just Durbin. Each and every one of these people is living a lie and deserve no support for ever running for any office of any kind. They are cowards who wouldn't stand up and stop the carnage that resulted from their silence. I'm so angry at all of these colluders who could have stopped the insanity but went along to get along. Every one of them bears equal responsibility for the endless Iraq war and should burn in hell, except I don't believe there is such a place, which means we should make their lives hell on earth, right? Claudia in Kentucky. She sent me this because of Dick Durbin's statement the other day that he had the information about the lies regarding Iraq, but because it had been the Senate Intelligence Committee had been sworn to secrecy. He couldn't say anything. And I just about lost it when I read that. So Dick Durbin, who I think is a, or I've thought up to hearing that, was an honorable and reasonable man. And then I find out by his own admission, and as Claudia writes, here's a whole list of these people who were on that intelligence committee, who knew full well that it was all lies, that we were that was the basis on which we were going into this invasion and occupation. It was all lies, and nobody said anything. That is evil. Silence equal death. Where have we heard that before, right? Silence equal death. Right? Of course. And then, of course, the one by Pastor Niemöller. They came for the trade unionists, and I didn't say anything, yada, yada. They came for the communists, I didn't say yada, yada. They came for the intellectuals, they came for the Jews. Finally, they came for me. And there was no one left to say anything. I can't, you know, it's just astonishing to me that people like Carl Levin and Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin and Ron Wyden and John Edwards, are you kidding me? Said nothing. Okay. And then there's this from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. A secret court approved all but one of the government's requests last year to search or eavesdrop on suspected terrorists and spies, according to data released today. 2,176 secret warrants issued in 2006. Now, what does that mean? Remember when Bush and Gonzalez and the rest of these criminal sons of bitches were caught bypassing the FISA court, which they still do? Here is proof that the FISA court never turned them down. A secret court approved all but one of the Bush crime family's requests last year to search or eavesdrop on suspected terrorists and spies. One application was denied part of it, and 73 others required changes before being approved. However, the Justice Department said in a report sent to the House and Senate that it could not yet provide data on how many times the FBI secretly sought telephone, internet, and banking records about U.S. citizens and residents without court approval. U.S. citizens. We can't give you that number. I don't know. Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't have any recollection. I don't know. 2,176 secret warrants issued in 2006. One was denied. And what did the Bush bastards say? Oh, well, we got to do it. We got to bypass the court because, you know, it takes too long and we get turned down and we can't be turned down because what does a special FISA court know about this? The person now appointed to oversee the FISA court is a former law partner, I believe, or student of Ken Starr. We'll be back after the break.
The troops out would send a terrible signal to the enemy. You know, the United States is weak.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is much more to cover here, but let's do some phone calls. If you don't mind. Oh, by the way, Joy in Santa Cruz would like everyone to know today is also the pagan day of Beltane. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Beltane is the day of the celebration of the fertility of the earth. May Day. The maypole represents the god, while placing it into the ground is symbolic of the Mother Earth and the union of the male and female principles. I think you know what the ribbons and dancers represent, as the ribbons come from the top of the pole. This is all about the spring and its fertility and is a celebration of the planting season. Happy Beltane from Joy in Santa Cruz. Beltane. And on this Beltane, the bees are gone. We haven't even talked about that. I get so fixated on what this murderous bastard in the White House is doing. And, do we ever, Kathy, talk about anything other than this? I don't think we do. I don't know how we sustain an audience by it's the same stuff every single day or night. I really have to respect the audience for hanging around this program, because it just never changes. I mean, that's the subtext of every show that we do. And there's so many other issues that are so critically important. Let's go to some phone calls here, starting with Scott in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
You know, that list that you just read about the people who knew what they knew.
Yeah, the senators.
You know, and that's precisely one of the reasons why Mike Revelle made that comment about does anyone who voted for the war does not deserve to be president. excuse me, one of those, who was it, Edwards?
Edwards
was on
is
there?
On that list, yeah.
You know, and this is the thing, and then he had also made a comment about, you remember when I told you several weeks back about my senator making that comment about all options were on the table as far as Obama
right.
was concerned and stuff?
Right, I do remember,
see,
yes.
You know, see, this is the thing I do not get about that, and, you know, that's one of the things that, as far as I'm concerned, he was right about what the Senate and what the Congress should do, and even told them how they should do it.
Who was right?
Mike Gravel.
Oh, Gravel, okay.
And given the fact that he's had experience from that, you know, I would think that he would know how to go about doing it. But, mm-hmm. this business with this bill, now, quite frankly, you know, I'm not really all that concerned with whether he vetoes this or not, because, quite frankly, this war, it should not be funded, period. And, you know, what Gravel suggested about either, one, presenting a bill to make it criminal to keep funding this war, or the other thing, which is what I suggest, is not present any bill and just let the money run out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, he has no choice. The troops would have to come home.
I think what holds the Congress back, at least Democrats, Republicans don't care. They don't care how many people die. They,
well, yeah,
don't care.
That's true.
They have no respect for human life whatsoever. But Democrats do. And there's been a tradition in this country that, somebody gets shot or wounded in a squad or a platoon. You don't leave your people there when you're in uniform. Also, the tradition is, Americans don't leave their people stranded on the battlefield. We have always tried, even when we had to so ignominiously leave Vietnam because we were on the wrong side in that war. We've always tried to support our troops until it became absolutely abundantly clear that we had to pull out. And even then, we still supported them. What the Republicans will do, since Republicans truly hate the United States, they hate our documents, they hate the Constitution, they hate the Bill of Rights, and because all Republicans are basically cowards, there would just be a feeding frenzy against Democrats if the Democrats did not pass a bill, or if the Democrats allowed the funding to run out. Since all Republicans are cowards and all Republicans are liars and all Republicans will do anything, they will cut their own mother's throats in order to remain in power. They would attack any move made by the Democrats to try to bring our troops home. Republicans don't give a damn about the troops. So I think that's the position the congressional Democrats are in.
Well, you know what I would say to that?
What?
Since they're going to do all of that stuff, anything, the first thing that they need to do is turn up the heat to boiling hot on the investigation of where all of this money has gone to over in Iraq, and as far as these contractors are concerned.
Yeah.
And then what they need to do, and they need to have people out there like Gravel making it crystal clear that them stopping the funding has nothing to do with them not supporting the troops. It has to do with stopping the money going to all of these evil thugs and these contractors.
But
and
how?
People need to get that through their thick skull.
But how would, let's supposing the congressional Democrats decided to do that, how would they get that message to the American public? Media is not going to report it that way. There's no way in hell that CBS, NBC, ABC, or CNN, or MSNBC would report what you just said. Just like they're calling this the Iraq withdrawal bill, which it is not. It is the Iraq supplemental funding bill. That's where we're screwed, Scott, is that the media would not make the point to us sheep out here that what the Democrats really had done was to insist that X, Y, and Z. What they would say would be, well, the Democrats have decided to leave the military stranded. Now, you know that as well as I do. So this is what the Republicans count on. First of all, that most people in the country are sheep-like when it comes to hearing the news. And secondly, the Republicans know that all they have to do is stand there and squeal and point fingers to the Democrats of everything that they have done, because the Democrats never pointed fingers at them. The Democrats just kind of sat there for the past 6 years and didn't fight back. So that's what they're afraid of. And I believe the Democrats, essentially, for the most part, are political cowards. They may be willing to fight and die for their country. They may want to have everyone in this country to have a decent life. But they're political cowards, so many of them. They're there to maintain their office, and they're not, and that's why John Edwards, what Gravel said, people who voted to fund this war should not be president. I think John Edwards, I think Hillary Clinton, I think Barack Obama, all of these so-called front runners are on the record now of making these warlike statements because they're cowards. They're cowards, political cowards. They're afraid of saying, no, goddammit, if I'm elected, it stops the day I take the oath, by executive order. And they won't do that, Scott.
Yeah, and I understand that. But what I would have to say is that any venue, whether it's underground, whether it's overground, whether they can get to it, they need to get to it. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, way back in the day with the black press and how they were able to get their newspapers out with a lot of the readers who really could not read that very well,
right,
when a lot of stuff was not printed in the mainstream about the black community, and how they had to go to railroad crossings in the middle of the night to get their news. Now, if you're looking at people who worked day and night and who were very hard and had very hard lives, if they were able to keep themselves informed, and we're living in a day now where we have the internet and we have other media sources that we can go to, there is no excuse for this kind of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
So I say whatever venue that you have to go on, you keep pounding that message over and over and over again. And I understand that the deck is stacked against you. But, you know, what other choice are you going to have? Are you going to fight, or are you going to just wither on the vine?
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Scott, thanks. I appreciate you checking. All right, take care. Take care. I'm pausing because I'm reading this from Bob in Miami. He writes, Claudia in Kentucky and you are both dead wrong about every one of the senators. I called last night, first time in almost 3 years, to comment on Durbin and so forth, and the rest of them. I mentioned my senator, Bob Graham, who was telling everyone who had listened before the invasion that the intelligence was wrong and essentially made up, i.e. a pack of lies. I guess I began ranting because the next thing I knew, the phone line went dead and you were welcoming Marge from Indiana to the program. Again, Bob Graham told the truth and was immediately smeared by the Republican pigs, a la Richard Clark, Joe Wilson, and anyone else who would stand up to these killers. I'm not sure what you're saying, Bob. The Senate Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee was given information. Bob Graham may have said that, but the people I just mentioned are the people who voted, did they not? They voted to go along with the Bush war plans? I mean, maybe somebody can clear this up for me. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy.
I understand the anguish that some feel about the death that takes place. I grieve for every death.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, this is getting confusing, and I'm adding to the confusion. I think I said that these Democrats, the list that I mentioned, are Democrats who voted for the war resolution, and that's not the case. That's not what I meant to say. The Democrats I mentioned were Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and they knew that the evidence being presented was a lie. They were sworn to secrecy not to reveal the lie to the American people. Now, people like Durbin and some of the other people I mentioned, Mikulski, Levin, they voted against the war resolution. And that's obviously not what I said, but that is what I meant. I understand there were 23 Democrats who voted against the war resolution, the Iraq war resolution, and Kathy sent me the list, 23 of them. My point was the Democrats who voted against the war resolution, who were also on the Senate Intelligence Committee, knew that it was a lie, that the evidence being presented was a lie, and did not speak out. That's the point I'm trying to make, and I think that's what Scott was trying to say, that Gravel was trying to make the other night. Anyone who did not speak out, I think that's what he said, doesn't deserve to be president. If they knew what the intelligence was showing. Jeffrey in Chicago writes, Mike, I believe you're giving Dick Durbin a bad rap. Durbin opposed the war resolution. As a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, he took an oath of silence. However, if other senators had put two and two together, they should have figured that Durbin knew something which he could not divulge. Also, Durbin courageously spoke out against the torture going on at Gitmo. He voted against the war in spite of strong opposition from the major Chicago papers while he was campaigning for re-election. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, do you remember when Senator Durbin did speak out early in the war? There was a feeding frenzy in the media, and Durbin basically had to retract what he said. What else have we got here? This is from Bob in Miami. The list was a list of all the senators on the Intelligence Committee, not the ones who voted for the war. Durbin voted against the war, as did other. Yeah, okay, well, I realize I said the wrong thing. What I was trying to say is that they may have voted against the war, these Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee, but they knew that the evidence being presented to the American people was a lie. And why didn't they speak out? Okay, have I got that cleared up? I know a lot of people think the sun rises and sets in Dick Durbin. I happen to think he's an honorable guy who's done really good stuff. But he's the one who started this firestorm, didn't he? When he said, I knew the intelligence was fake, but I didn't say anything because I was sworn to secrecy. Sworn to secrecy how? Is that in the Constitution of the United States that members of the Intelligence Committee to whom is given false information are to take an oath of silence? Or is it somewhere in the Constitution that Dick Durbin and every member of the Senate swears allegiance to and to uphold that this sort of thing... isn't their job advice and consent? Are they consenting to go along then with lies in order to take this country into an invasion and an occupation? Come on, y'all. Come on. I'm not out here trying to bust up on Dick Durbin tonight or any night or any of these Democrats, except when they deserve it. But I think the point is pretty obvious. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican. There were Republicans on that list, too, who knew this was lies. But I don't give a damn about Republicans. Republicans always lie about everything, in addition to being cowards. But why did my Democrats lie? A lie of omission. When they knew. Oh, well, they took an oath. Oh, I see. Okay. So the Senate Intelligence Committee takes an oath to keep what they hear behind closed doors, even if they know it's a lie. What the hell do you call that? What do you call that? It infuriates me. It especially makes me angry when it's a Democrat. I expect that kind of behavior out of a Republican because all Republicans are liars all the time. So the allegiance to the Senate Intelligence Committee in-house rules is more important to the Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee than the Constitution of the United States and whether or not this country goes into a war based on lies? Is that what you people want me to believe? You people that are saying, well, now cut Durbin some slack. Is that what you want me to believe? You cut him slack. Diane in Pittsburgh writes, not funding the war is not the same as not funding the troops. If you don't fund the troops, then they have to come home. You can't leave them there without money. Am I so stupid? Who cares how they got that message to the public? It's not a game. Lives are being lost. Let's get them the hell. Let's get them out of that hell hole, and then we can argue about it. The Democrats are definitely being cowards. Why can't they just do the right thing? And John Edwards, he's done in my book and in my heart. I just can't take it. Diane of Pittsburgh, I hear you, Diane. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if to Democrats if what I say is sometimes offensive to if you're a Democrat, you couldn't be more than of a Democrat than I am, and that's why I get so pissed off. So let's not have a contest here among Democrats to see who's the most Democrat, capital D. Because you're not going to beat me. There's just no way in hell. That's why when Democratic senators who know the truth and don't get the truth out, and I don't give a damn what kind of an oath they took. An oath? Oh, stop it. An oath to cover up the truth is an oath that is absolutely useless. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. You know, regarding that last outburst on my part about Dick Durbin and Bob Graham and the rest of these people, you know, sometimes I get the feeling, and I mean this humbly, that those of us who still maintain some sort of integrity, some sort of appreciation for absolute truth, in moments when absolute truth is needed, that we have become such a minority. And that it's almost embarrassing, isn't it, huh? Some of you who are emailing me now, and whether you email me or not, you know it. I think you know what I'm talking about. You were given a certain, or you learned, a certain set of standards where it concerns truth or justice or honor. And when you violated those standards in your life, as I violated those standards in my life, you know, we knew it. We knew what we were doing. We knew. We knew in the moment. Well, I'm lying right now. And somehow we would rationalize the lie. Right? You've done it. I've done it. We're being dishonorable now. But somehow we rationalize the dishonor. But we still understand it. And for those of us who think that way, and there must be millions of us, it's a struggle. It's a constant struggle. It's like trying to overcome racism. You know, I've made the point before that you can't be a white person in America and not be a racist. You can't. Now, you can struggle against it and you can fight against it, but you are still saddled with it. It's part of your heritage. And this whole idea of expecting senators to rise to a higher level when something like this invasion was being planned and the mass death that was being anticipated. And for these senators to then fall back on, well, I'm sworn to secrecy. I mean, what the hell is going on here? Is this the boys' clubhouse where we have secret rings and handshakes and, you know, we're not supposed to tell anybody two blocks over what's going on in our clubhouse? Oh, give me a goddamn break here. We're talking about human lives. Excuse me. But I'm stuck with that. And you are too, right? And maybe the older we get, we can get rid of it. Maybe we can just become, oh, screw it. And just become as cynical, you know, and start telling each other, well, when I was a youngster, I used to believe in truth and justice. But now I realize it's just a fool's game. To hell with them. To hell with them. Right? Remember when you were a kid and there was always an old man in your neighborhood that talked that way? Right? Huh? You remember? Right. Is that what we're to become? Ah, the hell with it. I don't care. oh, my God. Reg emails in regarding the cowards and liars. At the very least, any one of the Democrats on the Intelligence Committee could have said that they had been sworn to secrecy and could not reveal the details of what they knew, but that they knew that there were lies being told to the American people. They were cowards, plain and simple. And they're even more complicit than those members of Congress who did not have access to those lies. Well, that's how I feel. Dick Durbin didn't have to violate his oath of secrecy and say, oh, here's what we talked about. Or any of those Democrats. They didn't have to do that. But they could have let the rest of us know, hey, yo, look, I can't tell you what's being said, but we're being lied to. Jesus. Ken writes, Mike, Durbin could not say anything. Bush back then was saying either you're with us or you're with the enemy. Every time one Democrat or a level-headed person would scream, I guess that's what Ken's writing here, either he got dismissed or fired or a smear campaign was put in place to make his life miserable. O'Neill, Clark, Murtha, Dean, etc., etc. It was only after this last election that so many Democrats found their spines and as a gang was able to stand strong with a voice. Well, you know, what you say, I understand, but it doesn't wash for me. It just doesn't wash for me. I don't believe in collective courage. Either you have it or you don't. I don't believe in collective truth. Either you stand for it or you don't. I'm sorry. If that offends somebody's sensibilities. I'm not saying I've always spoken the truth or always been an honorable man. I have not. In either case. Or acted with integrity. I have not. But at least I've recognized it every time, and I felt like hell afterwards. But where it concerns something as critical as understanding that lies are being told to take this nation into invading another country, Jesus, God in heaven, what is more important? Maintaining the fiction of an oath to keep that kind of horror hidden from the American people, or being courageous and standing up and saying, no, God damn it, I'm not going to go along with this. Well, I know what the answer is for me, but I'm not a senator. And I know what the answer is for you, but you're not a senator either. So, and we're stuck with it. You know, we're stuck with it. We're stuck with the consequences of those lies and that deception. And I cannot believe, to this day, 4 years into this, I cannot believe where this crime family has taken us and why, during that time, there were enough Democrats. They could have done anything. They could have walked out. They could have closed down the government. They could have done anything. Anything to stop this madness. And they had the template that they could operate from. Vietnam. The lies, the deception, the 58,000 dead Americans, the 3,000 dead Indochinese. There it was. At any time, these senators and these House members, these Democrats, could have said, no, 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 we're not going along with this. And I'm not talking about their vote. Screw their vote. The way the rules are set up in the House and the Senate by these filthy Republicans, the votes don't mean anything. I'm talking about their physical walking out and saying, I am not going to be a party to this kind of madness. I'm not going to do it. I will resign my seat in the House. I will resign my seat in the Senate. I'm not going to do it. Now, how long do you think it would have taken for the American people to have gotten the word if Democrats would have done that and said, no, we're not going to do it? We had 10 million people around this planet who demonstrated against this war before this war began. We had millions in this country. The support was there to not let this happen. And now we're sitting here playing this junky ass game of I'm going to veto your bill. Well, go ahead and veto it. Well, I'm going to. Well, go ahead. Well, I'm going to. And the death rate continues to go up and the destruction continues. I'm sick of this. Sick of it. I'm sick of this banter back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. I'm sick of everybody covering their own ass. I'm sick of the lies and the filth and the murderous attitude of these Republicans who don't care about anything except themselves. Rat bastards. So here we sit on this junky-ass radio program talking about, oh, well, did you hear Bush vetoed the bill today? Oh, really? Yeah, he did. Oh, what's going to happen next? Oh, I don't know. Pelosi and Reid came out and said blah, 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 blah. And Bush came out and said blah, 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 blah. Okay, we'll take another break, and I'm going to calm the hell down here and let you all talk. Sorry for the outburst. Really, 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 really. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malone.
I got a name, and I got a number. heavy head and the thought about leaving town. I could have died if I wanted to, slipped over the edge and drowned. But oh no, baby, I won't give up that easy, no.
21 past the hour. I've got a lot of emails, well, not a lot, but maybe four or five here, from listeners here pointing out that had these senators violated their sworn their agreement to keep everything on that they heard in secret, that they were subject to criminal penalties and maybe even something regarding treason. I guess I don't know if treason is the right word, but they were subject to criminal penalties. And with all the anthrax flying around and threats to go to Guantanamo and yada 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 yada. Well, again. I'm not suggesting that any of these senators, these Democrats, that I'm not suggesting that they should have come out and revealed what was told to them and therefore violate whatever they were sworn to. They didn't have to do that. What they did have to do, what was required of them, as far as I'm concerned, and again, I realize how stupid it is at my age to be dealing in absolutes. I know a lot of you deal in hundreds of shades of gray, and in some instances, that's where you have to go. But where it concerns death and destruction and invading a country because it is a target of opportunity, oh, for Christ's sake, come on. What do you mean shades of gray where it concerns that? It's only black or white. It's only invade or don't invade when the whole thing is based on lies. But my point is, Durbin and none of these people had to come out and say, oh, guess what we were told? Now, I'm going to align myself or subscribe to a higher authority than this filthy, pukey Senate. I'm going to tell you what was told to me in secrecy, even though I've taken an oath. Now, I don't expect them to do that. What I expected them to do was resign. Walk out. Walk away from it. Because it became a huge, corrupt, filthy, war-making, lying, deceptive machine that took this country into a war. Now, what are you people who are writing me about compromising values, what are you going to say to that? They didn't have to say what was told to them. All they had to do was stand for honor and decency and the truth and walk the hell out. What's your argument to that? Yes, Kathy.
I'm a little confused. Am I to understand that if members of the Intelligence Committee have information that the current administration is lying us into a war, that if they revealed that lie to the American people, they would be subject to treason?
If it comes in the form of secret testimony, obviously or apparently, there is some, when the intelligence community takes the intelligence committee into executive session where they are sworn to secrecy about what they hear. Yes, if that is revealed, apparently there are criminal sanctions against that or some sort of sanction that would put these senators at risk. I don't know what that can happen to them. I don't care. That's not the issue. To me, that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not on being told that the information the Bush crime family was using to take us into war was based on lies. At that point, for any senator, Democrat or Republican, but Republicans are vile, vicious bastards, and they don't care about lies. So I'm left with the Democrats. For any Democratic senator to at that point then say, oh, whoops, my oath of silence supersedes my fealty to the American people or the U.S. Constitution. I say to that senator, God damn you. How dare you call yourself a United States senator?
I guess that's the confusing part for me, because it would seem that there's something incredibly wrong with our system of government then, that would protect a lying criminal administration against an honest senator who was maybe trying to save lives and protect our troops and protect the homeland, because honestly, obviously, this invasion of Iraq has made America a lot less secure and broken the military and put us at risk and for future attack,
sure.
Lessened our stature in the world, and on and on. So how we have a system of government that protects the liars and not the innocent is confounding.
Well, it is. And, you know, since we have a three-year-old almost, what I'm curious about is the same thing most parents would be curious about a three-year-old, if it matters. And that is, how are we going to explain this stuff to her?
Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Well, he's my favorite Canadian.
Everybody knows that.
Phone number here is 800-989-1480. Let's go to your phone calls. Phil is calling from San Diego. Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hey.
Here's the direct phone line to the Judiciary Committee for everybody to just get these scoundrels out. You know, they're just turds in the White House. I'm
all
glad
right.
You're doing what you're doing. It's the phone number is 202-224-5225, and it's just another BTL day in the homeland, you know, break the law day. Not
yeah.
Law day, it's break the law day.
Yeah, really.
It's just so, I'm just glad you're doing what you're doing, because basically it's like a fear thing with the senators. That's what these clowns do is, everything is a fear thing, like fear factor become reality to mm-hmm. everybody. And we can't be afraid of these people because they're afraid of us. It's as simple as that. You know, it's like we see right through them for what they are.
Yeah, I don't understand a lack of courage. And I'm not talking about insane, stupid bravado. And I'm not also necessarily talking about bravery. There have been a couple of times in my life when I figure I've acted in a brave way. There's also been times when I feel like I've acted in a cowardly way. But to me, courage is something else again. And when you set yourself up to be a senator or a representative, and you say to the people who put you in office, look, I'm going to go into a government here, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to try to make things better, and it doesn't make any difference what your political ideology is. Of course, all Republicans lie about that. They don't give a damn what their constituents want. But Democrats are a little bit different. And when you make that declaration, I'm ready to be a senator or a representative. I'm thinking about the Roman Cincinnatus who went ahead and joined up to fight against the enemies of Rome. When the game was over, he beat his sword back into a plowshare, so to speak, and he went back to being a private citizen and being a farmer. And to me, it takes an act of courage to be a senator or a representative, and what goes with that act of courage is an insistence that you're not going to be complicit in some hideous action as this Bush crime family has taken this country. So
having a conscience.
Yeah, well, that's it too. Having a conscience that demands courage in the face of so they know that they're in Washington, D.C. They know they can be hit with anthrax. They know that Karl Rove can order them murdered or beaten up on the streets. They know this. If that's too hot in that particular kitchen, then get the hell out and let somebody else who does have the courage go in there and say, wait a second, these are all lies. These are all lies, and the American people needs to know. These sort of like Daniel Ellsberg did with the Pentagon Papers.
Yeah. That's a courageous man right there.
Sure. When he said, this is nonsense. These are lies. Look. And what did the Nixon administration do? Tried to get a court order to prevent the New York Times from presenting the truth to the American public. Republicans are vile, filthy, filthy subhumans.
And General Eaton is another patriot, the man that you spoke of earlier. And the thing that I wanted to say was, one down and 30 to go. Remember, 7 days in May. What you said, I wish it could become reality.
Yeah, well.
You have a great evening, man. Thanks for being there.
Well, thanks for checking in, Phil. I appreciate it.
Thank
you very much. All right, you too.
Well, if I remember my high school lit class at all, the Joint Chiefs of Staff hijacked the government and moved everybody to a mountain in Montana. I don't think I want to go with Pete Pace and do that route if that's just okay with everybody else. Now, that's my memory. I just may not be remembering it. Right?
Well, what I said earlier tonight was that, I honestly believe, and I may be wrong about this because I'm also anti-war, I'm not anti-military, but I'm anti-war. You know, I live in the real world. I don't live in some idealistic world where everybody's going to be nice to me because I'm an American. But I do believe that if we are to have a standing army, which the framers of this country said don't do it, if we are going to do that, then it should be designed to protect this country. And that's it. We have U.S. troops in, 114 countries? What the hell is that? But the point I'm trying to get to, I honestly believe that people who join the officer ranks of the United States military, either by going to the service academies or through ROTC or through officers candidate school, however they get there, that these people are dedicated to the protection of this country. They take an oath to that effect, to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. I've got to believe that these people are truly patriotic as a group. Now, I'm not saying they're not nutballs inside this officer cadre. Of course there are. Anytime you get to an elite level, I don't care if it's in military or business or education or whatever, you're going to find, or science, you're going to find the nutballs. You're going to find the crazy people. But for the most part, you know, when you see general after general after general who has been forced to retire or to get out of the military, and these military leaders are saying, look, this is insane. This is madness what is going on here. That's got to count for something. I believe that people who, especially those who obtain a certain rank, not all, but most who obtain a certain rank, where they're in positions of command and control, that these people are truly dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution. And I believe they don't want war, that they want to be ready in case one comes. And I'm not talking about the military-industrial complex. I'm not talking about those sick sons of bitches. I'm talking about people who study war, who understand that war is the ultimate breakdown of civilization. It's where civilization stops and death and chaos begins. And therefore, they understand we don't want to go to war. But in order to make sure that doesn't happen, let's be prepared in case we have to. Now, I know that sounds like a dichotomy or a contradiction in terms or illogical or insanity or whatever you want to call it. But that's the way it is in the real world with the human race. But the point I'm getting to, Jesus, it's taken me all night to get to this. I do believe that the upper ranks of the military are dedicated nationalists who believe in this country and the institutions. Now, maybe that's wrong. Don't email me and tell me that Hitler's minions were dedicated nationalists. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about people who are dedicated to preserving and defending the Constitution of the United States. And then along comes these sick sons of bitches in the Bush crime family whose sole objective is to destroy the Constitution. Hello? Do we see a conflict there? So what's a military person in the upper ranks to do? Two choices. Mutiny, resignation. And because of what they've been taught, and because of, and I have to believe this, because of their respect for the Constitution, they resign. Or retire. Or get out. But the choice for mutiny is always there. The choice for Dick Durbin and other Senate Democrats was always there. If you know the information being handed out to the American public is a lie, what is your obligation? What is your duty? Mutiny or resignation? Now, that's awfully black and white, and I don't care. I mean, I do care. I do care that it's black and white. Do you compromise on the truth? You do if you're Limbaugh or Hannity or Savage or the rest of these filthy, putrid corruptors of the truth. You do if you're a Republican. Of course you compromise the truth. Of course you break it and stomp on it and squat on it and destroy it. It means nothing. But if you have any shreds of honor or decency, what do you do when you're confronted with the kind of situation that Democrats, and I'm not picking on Durbin, Durbin's just one of many, when you're confronted with what the Democrats were confronted with, what do you do? I've spent 6 years watching Democrats in the Senate pass into positions of power Supreme Court justices who are nothing more than right-wing neo-Nazi ideologues, Federalist Society thugs. I've watched them pass into regulatory positions, people who are nothing more than industry shills. I've watched them confirm pigs into the United States Bush's cabinet, people who were no more qualified for those positions than I was. I've watched Democrats go along and get along and play the game, and the sons of bitches have been complicit in destroying my country. Now, what are we supposed to do about that? Are we supposed to sit back and go, well, you know, there was a threat of anthrax. Well, you know, Ashcroft was saying either you're for us or you're for the enemy. At that point, you stand up and you say, you rotten son of a bitch, who do you think you're talking to? I'm a United States Senator. Who do you think you're talking to? I represent the American people, you pig. You represent a criminal enterprise. Get out of my face, Ashcroft. Get out of my face, Gonzalez. Get out of town. That's what you do if you're a Democratic senator. That's what you do. You don't say, I'll go ahead and vote for Sam Alito because, you know, we're going to save our vetoes for something important. Oh, Jesus. I know you've been lying to me. It's getting rough, but the cup I've got to say enough's enough.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and answered your calls. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. Also, Catherine Bay, who is the executive producer of this program. Don't forget Youth Night this Friday on The Malloy Show. Quick email here from Steve, who writes, "Dear Mike, appreciate what you said about the people who knew what was going on but yet did not do anything about it. It's a shame that more politicians care about their jobs and themselves and not the greater good. And to think that true grit and courage has gone out the door, nobody has taken a true stand against all the wrong that has been perpetrated by what I believe is the most evil and corrupt administration that this country has ever known. It boggles my mind that everyone else around the world has figured it out, yet America still has its head up its backside. I'm tired of the back and forth. I want this to finally stop. What has to be done to finally put the brakes on this runaway train bound for hell? When is Congress going to finally stop the madness and boot these fools out?" I don't know, Steve. I don't know. Back to your phone calls. Joe in Miami is calling. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right.
Listen, two things. Number one, Al-Masri. They better not get too excited if they think him being killed is going to save anything. I understand he was killed by insurgents because they didn't like who he targeted. So maybe pretty soon there's going to be a lot of U.S. troops being car bombed. That's the whole point. And Durbin's case, all Durbin had to say was, "I'm being lied to, and it ain't in closed session."
Yeah, he doesn't have to reveal anything. And
right.
and I think it's Joyce, our Arkansas bureau chief, sent me an email and said, "Well, if he took an oath, then doesn't the oath hold now?"
Right.
I mean, why is he coming out now and saying that he was lied to, but he was sworn to secrecy?
And Mike, let me close with one thing. My father died this weekend, a 30-year military man. And he taught me that when the drums of war start, keep your eyes open. Take care, my man.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate it. Michael in San Francisco writes, "Mike, all of us are intimately familiar with rationalization and situational ethics just to live our lives. Too many of us have become too comfortable with the process and have taken it to the limit. The more it is used and stretched to the limit, the more it creates the thousands of shades of gray that you mentioned. Like American capitalism run amok, so has truth and ethics. It's sad. I love the show." Michael in San Francisco. Thanks, Michael. I don't know why I'm giggling. It just seems it's sad, but I love the show. And Reggie writes, "The members of the military take an oath to defend the nation against enemies, foreign and domestic. The enemy is in power in Washington." Yeah, that's the other part I don't understand. Why have the Joint Chiefs of Staff or somebody come out and said, "Look, we take an oath to protect and defend against enemies, foreign and domestic, and the Bush administration is gutting, destroying the Constitution, which makes them, by definition, a domestic enemy." I don't get that. That's not mutiny. That's fulfilling their oath. I don't know.
Could it be that they're all dirty? I mean, I think about how corrupt Rumsfeld was, how much money he made off wars, past, present, and probably future. I mean, the man is one of the richest people in the world, probably. And when you get someone that corrupt at the head of the military, then won't they all be corrupted?
Well, but Rumsfeld's not a military man. I was referring to career, lifetime officers.
They don't have corporate interests?
Well, some of them do. When they come out, they sit on boards of the military-industrial complex companies. I understand that. Maybe I'm just crazier than a loon, Kathy. Maybe none of this, you know. Maybe I'm still remembering what I was taught in high school civics and American government, and maybe none of it applies anymore. Maybe it's all become so corrupted that I and the people that email me about this, and you know, we all sit here and sound like idiots every single night. oh my God, listen to these idealists. I don't know anymore. I really don't. You may be right. Maybe the highest ranking officers in the officer corps in this country are as corrupt as the highest ranking politicians. I don't know. But I was always taught and I always believed that true military men understood that the military is used only when all else fails and the possibility of a continuing attack or an imminent attack on this country is in the offing. Then the military comes to the defense of the country. I guess that's just not true anymore. I don't know. I'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. Sorry I got just so out of control. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.